This is Voyager Revisited, a podcast dedicated to the Star Trek Voyager series. I'm Jean McDonald, and on each episode, I invite a Star Trek fan to come on and talk about Voyager. For this episode, the first episode, I am really pleased to have Scott McNulty as my guest. Scott is the host of Random Trek, and that's the podcast that hooked me on pop culture podcasts. So, welcome, Scott. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be doing this.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm flattered that you drew inspiration. And clearly, you probably thought Scott is doing this all wrong. I must start my own podcast to show him how to podcast about Star Trek, and I welcome it because I need all the help I can get.
No, not at all. Although I definitely have been inspired by Random Trek to get more into Voyager and maybe like figure out why I like it so much and also figure out why some people don't like it so much either and see what I could do about that. And last year I was a guest on Random Trek and we talked about Voyager for a very long time. In fact, I feel like I could just take that podcast and slot it in as my first episode of Voyager Revisited.
That would make your life so much easier.
It would. Okay. Talk to you later then, Scott.
Bye.
Bye. No, seriously, I re-listened to it today and I thought, oh, I was going to say that today on the podcast with Scott. But I mean, I will because this is a different podcast and different people may be listening to it. But what I said then was that I was inspired by Random Trek to create a Voyager viewing guide, a Voyager episode viewing guide to help people who had never watched Voyager straight through just start watching it and skip over the episodes that are maybe not so good.
Is there such a thing as a Voyager episode that's not so good?
Is there such thing as a Star Trek episode that's not so good?
Yes. many Star Trek episodes are not so good.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I feel, that we definitely know that there are episodes and maybe even entire seasons of Star Trek that are not great in other series. But somehow I feel that Star Trek Voyager gets the rap for not being good because people have only watch the bad episodes.
How do people just only watch the bad episodes, Gene? Are they making the circuit or something?
Yes. I don't know. That's not true. But I think some episodes seem better if you watch them in the context of watching a whole season or a whole series. And that because you're invested in the characters, you know the backstory or you know where it's going and you like the episode despite its flaws, perhaps.
Well, I think that's true because I think and I was pondering that as I watched the episode that we will talk about at some point because we did a little pre-work and you gave me some questions, which I don't do on my podcast. I don't prepare my guests.
No, you do not.
I pounce upon them. And so thinking about what your questions made me think more about Star Trek in general and what makes, to me, a good Star Trek episode or series, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I feel like there are a couple things on the episode level that work for me in Star Trek. And there are kind of two big buckets that I put my good Star Trek episodes in. And they are either character driven. So they're telling me something about a character, putting characters in a new combination, advancing a relationship, or just kind of a character study. And the reason that I watch Star Trek and enjoy Star Trek is because I like the characters and revisiting my friends and their adventures. and so that's one kind of bucket that I enjoy. And then the other bucket is kind of a general why I like science fiction, and it's kind of like the big idea.
Yeah.
Episodes that they follow. Someone says, hey, wouldn't it be fun if X, and what are the repercussions of X, and let's explore that in this episode. And those are another kind of favorite Star Trek episode of mine. And Voyager certainly has both of those kinds of episodes scattered throughout its seven seasons, right?
Yes, yeah, seven seasons.
Well, there are many theories as to why people don't like Voyager.
Yes,
some obvious and some maybe not so obvious. But yeah, I mean, I think that's what's for me what makes a good Star Trek. What makes Star Trek good is those two things, and if you have the wrong, quote unquote, mix of characters, then it becomes more difficult for me to get into it. And the wrong mix, of course, is totally subjective, right?
Right.
So for another person, and that's why I find on my podcast talking to people about kind of what their favorite Star Trek series is so interesting, because it is, I mean, there are only a handful to pick from. So generally there is overlap. But sometimes when someone picks, let's say, Enterprise, I find it fascinating.
Yes.
Because Enterprise is not my favorite series. So talking to someone about it and figuring out why is interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I enjoy that part of your podcast too, that people talk about their history with watching Star Trek. I mean, most people come to it somewhere in their youth. Mm-hmm. And then they, like anything else, the one from their youth is the one that is the best, potentially. And so, but in my case, I did come to it in my youth, my very early youth. I was actually a kid watching the original Star Trek when it aired. But a young kid, but still. I clarified this with my father recently, that he says we actually bought a color television in order to watch Star Trek. So
it's a wise investment.
A wise investment. And apparently the beginning of the need for gadgets to satisfy our needs in watching our favorite stuff. But I love the original series. That's all there was, and that's all there was for a long time. By the time that The Next Generation came out, I was in the non-TV period of my life. I was in graduate school, and I didn't even really have a TV most of the time, and I didn't know anybody who was sitting around watching TV. It's very different from college. And so I missed like the original airing of the spinoff series, except here and there when somebody would be watching one at their house and I would watch with them. So I knew about Voyager and I knew about Deep Space Nine, but I didn't really watch it until I became old enough to have a TV out of graduate school, not required to sit in the library all day, every day. Mm-hmm. And also the series were available to watch from start to finish, which was really, I mean, that's changed TV watching as we know, that you could just keep watching one episode after another. And if there's a lot of them, like there are of most of the Star Trek series, you could take care of a week or two of free time.
That's true.
No problem. So that's when I watched Voyager. I was thinking like, I know there's this series with this female captain. So I'm interested in that they finally brought a woman on to be captain. And then I just watched it with no prejudices. I didn't know the fandom that well at all back then. And I just watched it and I liked it. So then it surprised me to find out how much there was like people who said, it's not that good. I'm like, really? I just spent like 2 weeks of my life watching that show. And I thought it was pretty good. But yeah, that's Star Trek. And that's people's opinions. And that is what makes it interesting. And so I've rewatched Voyager several times since then, and then creating that episode guide, I kept dipping in to watch episodes that I couldn't remember if they were good or not. and now even listening to Random Trek, you've had a lot of Voyager episodes recently. And
it's true.
I like to say, you haven't there isn't an episode that I thought was really good that you hated. So I feel good with that.
Well, that's good. And I think I make this point a couple of times on Random Trek, but it is something that I think causes a lot of trouble on the internet. And that is people mistaking their subjective opinion for objective fact.
Right.
So I think it is possible, Gene, this is going to blow your mind. It is possible for you to think an episode of Voyager, the same episode, both of us could watch the same episode of Voyager. You could think it's a masterpiece and I can think it's completely horrible. And then we're both right, which is blows people's minds, right? It's okay to like something and it's okay not to like something. As long as you are open to the fact that everyone's opinion on kind of pop culture things generally is fine. It doesn't really matter.
Right.
It's okay. Now, there are exceptions, right? There's kind of this certain kinds of toxicity that exists certainly in fandom, and that can lead to behavior that is not good. But I think that all that comes to the fact that people think there's this one truth, one like soul's truth that everyone must adhere to. And if you disagree, you are wrong.
I completely agree with that, although I am also very suggestible. And when I listen to a good argument of why something isn't good, I think, I didn't look at it that way. And I accept that argument. But there's certainly – I will not budge on my feeling that Voyager is – a good and worthwhile series. I also like your formulation that all Star Trek is good Star Trek.
Exactly. I mean, they're gradations of good. That's
yes,
what I say.
Yes, we're happy to have them. But you do bring up an interesting point with your two buckets of character-driven episodes and then science fiction-driven episodes that I have been thinking about since re-listening to our last podcast on Random Trek, where I think you said that maybe Voyager has the highest number of annoying crew members.
And that sounds like something I would say.
I'm not sure if I can argue against that. So, I think it has some great crew members, and we have, discussed these before, but sort of the Janeway, the Doctor, Seven of Nine are great characters. And I happen to like some characters that you don't like. There's certain characters, like I don't really want to get all down on Neelix, but he is annoying. In fact, I think he's written to be annoying, and unfortunately he's annoying us.
Yes, exactly. He's doing such a good job. Playing that character and that role that it is effective in annoying everyone who's watching, not only the other characters on Voyager, but the viewers.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the other characters like Chakotay and Tuvok. But they don't get to do as much and they don't get as fleshed out as the characters they spend the most amount of time on. But whatever. I mean, it is just interesting that we can sit around and think about these issues. But ultimately, what matters is just watching the dang show and liking it or not liking it, enjoying it or not. That's the most important thing.
It's true. And giving it a chance, right? I think that's the other thing, right? And some people just kind of have this like accepted wisdom that Voyager is bad, so I should not watch it. Really, you should watch it and judge for yourself whether or not you like it. And once again, I say it's fine not to like it. I do think it is foolish to prejudge it and say, well, I don't like it, so I'm not going to watch it because of Neelix. When, Neelix is fine. He, within the context of the show, he's fine. And there's no reason not to watch Voyager. Certainly, and Gene, before we got started, you touched on this. A lot of the fandom reaction had to do with the fact that Captain Janeway was a woman. And this is the first kind of main – well, that's not true. The first captain of a series who was a woman. I was going to say first main character, but I would assume it's an ensemble cast, and so TNG had women in the ensemble.
Yeah.
But Janeway is the main character of this show, right? And some I'm going to generalize here and say that Star Trek fandom, certainly at the time when Voyager premiered was probably largely male, or at least geared towards men. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the actual percentage was. And so some men didn't like the fact that there was a lady captain and couldn't cotton to it. And I think there are two things about that. One, it's stupid. But two, I think that the first season of Voyager, the writers of Voyager did not do Janeway much credit. And so you have this – you already have this hill to climb with kind of winning over certain skeptical people about having a woman as captain. And then you have her not treated super well, I think, in the first season as a character. And then that makes people say, well, see, look, she's not very good.
Yeah.
And so then you get that double whammy of kind of an illegitimate concern, then bolstered by an actual concern. But, you know, I've said this before, almost every first season of a Star Trek series, with the exception of the original series, possibly Discovery, although Discovery was very much more uneven than the original series, is rocky too. Mm-hmm. So Voyager is no exception to that. So I think that even judging Voyager on the first season is probably not the way to go. Janeway is a great character.
She is a great character. That's true. And boy, you know, I just saw this thing the other day. Somebody posted on Twitter. It was a clip from a press interview with Janeway, with Kate Mulgrew, together with Tim Russ and Robert McNeil. So Tuvok in Paris and Janeway. And it's like these two, you know, classic kind of local news people, a man and a woman. And it's going really well. Kate Mulgrew, of course, is awesome. And she's saying, like, yes, it's very exciting to be blazing this trail. And they ask, like, I still want to call him Tuvok in Paris, but Tim Russ and Robert McNeil, like, oh, you know, so she's the boss. And they're like, yeah, she's totally the boss of us, you know, like, on screen and off. I think, you know, Kate Mulgrew has a really strong personality. And it's going really well. And you think, this is such a nice interview. And then the dude from the news channel,
the dude,
I just can't call him anything else. He goes, like, and I hear there's another thing that's very appropriate for the first episode, or sorry, the first series that has a female captain. And that's that you finally have a kitchen on the ship.
Oh,
and
no.
I mean, the clip ends there, but all I can imagine is like Kate Mulgrew going in her head going like, I need to throttle this guy, but I'm not going to. But how is that? I'll find the clip. I'll put it in the show notes. I mean, I watched it once and I couldn't bear to watch it again because it just kind of broke my heart. Because that's 1990. I should know when the show starts, right? 1995 or something. And there's somebody thinking like he thought he was being really clever too. You could see he was like, ah, and here's another way. This is like a cool woman show. They have a kitchen. I was like, really, dude? Really? So there was a lot to cope with, I think, you know, and to overcome back then. It's not even that long ago. And certainly for me, you know, I was already in my 30s when this show came out. And at the time I thought, eh, things are pretty good for women. But I had a kitchen, of course, so I was very satisfied.
Yes. There's always more work to be done. And that's the other thing that I learned, not that there's more work to be done, but through the course of doing Random Trek and talking to lots of people who identify with Captain Janeway for a variety of reasons and who say that – or who Voyager is their favorite series. I was going to say who say that it is as if there's some doubt. But no, it is their favorite series. Mm-hmm. And that has led me to really take to heart this idea that intellectually I knew mattered, but as a white dude – I have never lived in a world where I do not feel well represented in the media that I consume. Mm-hmm. So representation and how important it is when you're watching something to have a character or characters, ideally, that match you in a way that you can really, grab onto and can act as a model for you. Not that you can't, enjoy characters that aren't like you, but it's something very different when you see someone who looks like you or who acts like you on screen doing things. And that's very important to people. And I think a lot of people, certainly, I'll speak for all white men, which is probably not a great thing. It's something that we don't even think about, right? Because right. Everywhere you look, we're well represented.
Yeah. You can't really have that experience of going like, whoa, it's somebody like me.
Exactly. Because they're always somebody like me.
Oh, yes. And I do think that representation matters in all sorts of ways. But, whether Voyager is good or not is fairly objective. I think they did a good job with Janeway as a captain, and they gave her a good range of strengths and weaknesses and character flaws and personality issues that made her interesting that weren't necessarily like she's a woman, although she is a lot more sympathetic towards the crew than, say, Captain Picard.
Well, they all have their different styles. And I didn't want to say I don't think that Voyager is good or bad with an asterisk, because it's just about whether or not Captain Janeway is a woman, right? I mean, yeah. She's a woman. Whether or not a main character is a woman, right? It's not like, oh, it's good because there's a lady captain. I think that that's part of why it is a favorite for some people and not a favorite for others. Yes. But I do think it is irrelevant when looking at whether or not these characters are kind of timeless and engaging.
Yes.
And how that then impacts the rest of the show. But at first glance, obviously, for some people that is important, and for other people, well, for some people it's important in different ways. So it can trigger you in ways that perhaps people were not expecting.
Well, yeah, actually, that made me think of a theoretical I want to pose to you. What if?
Ooh, all right, lay it on me.
They had made the first female captain the commander of Deep Space Nine.
Oh,
and they made Sisko the captain of Voyager. Let's just go with Sisko and Janeway and not theoretical captains. Them. Yeah. Hmm. I worry about Voyager's chances, honestly. Not because Sisko isn't great, but he's not very cautious.
Well, so I think each show has the captain that it needs, and and of course this is because it's done, and these roles are inextricably linked to the actors, perhaps with the one exception of Captain Kirk, which and Spock and McCoy, which the characters seem to have risen beyond the actors who embody them originally. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if any of the other Star Trek characters have that. As much as I like them, I don't know if they have that much staying power as Kirk, McCoy, and Spock, kind of like the holy trinity of Star Trek. they're almost Shakespearean characters, right? So it seems like it's hard for the rest of the characters. And from those three characters, basically, we get every other character in Star Trek. They're just kind of combinations of those three characters just rotating out.
Right.
So swapping Sisko and Janeway is an interesting thought exercise, but I think that would ruin both shows. Not because they're both great characters, but they just are like the wrong characters for the setups that they have, right? Because
that's true.
Deep Space Nine, well, I guess Janeway would be the prophet in that. And she's a science officer. She doesn't really – I mean, Sisko takes a while to warm up to it, but you feel like he's much more ready to believe and embrace this kind of, we don't understand it, wormhole aliens. Okay, maybe I'm a religious icon. I don't feel like Janeway would really enjoy that.
No, she would not.
Or have any time for it. And she certainly wouldn't have any time for Golducott. So.
Well, but I would pay money to see that showdown.
and Sisko would not have time for Neelix or Harry Kim or Tom Paris.
Right. That's true.
And I don't know. It would be – he certainly would not be the right kind of guide slash mentor for Seven of Nine. That would just – I don't know how that would work. It just would seem – I think both Deep Space Nine and Voyager would be in trouble if we were to swap both of them.
No, you're right. And I think more like my question was coming from the idea of that I feel like, you know, Voyager's, you know, its mission or what, you know, which is just getting home, was a pretty tough mission. And to have one ship of the same crew for 7 years with no, you know, no RISA, no space stations, no leave, no going to conferences, that hampers your ability to, I don't know. I also would not like to see Janeway and Kira Nerys try to work in the same office.
Yeah, they don't seem like, I feel like they would be friends, but not great coworkers. I don't know what based that off, but...
No, I totally get that as well. I want to take a short break here and remind folks that we're in the middle of the Incomparables membership drive. This is how you can support Voyager Revisited and lots of other fun podcasts. You can sign up for a monthly or annual pledge, and you can support this podcast directly. Here's what you do. Go to theincomparable.com/members and sign up. You'll then be asked to pick the shows on the network you'd like to support. If you just check the box for Voyager Revisited, your entire contribution will support this show after a few fees are taken out. If you listen to other podcasts on the Incomparable Network, and I highly recommend that you do, you can check their boxes too, and your contribution will be shared equally by all the shows you want to support. As a thank you for supporting us, members receive lots of extras. There's exclusive bonus audio. There's a bootleg podcast where you can hear shows right after they're recorded without having to wait for the edited version to arrive. And there's a members-only community on Slack. During pledge season, many of the shows on the network will be posting bonus episodes that are just for members. For example, you'll have exclusive access to follow the voyages of the USS Incomparable. That's right. A number of us banded together to do a version of the Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. Scott McNulty from Random Trek is our game master, and Jason Snell is the captain of the USS Incomparable. I serve as Lieutenant Commander Dophy, who is the Bajoran Chief of Security. It really is a lot of fun, and I know the members loved the episode we did last year. And as new members, you'll have access to that too. So if you'd like to support us, go to theincomparable.com/members to sign up. Thanks for listening. So part of our prep for this episode is I asked you to pick any Voyager episode you wanted to watch. And you picked a good one. I mean, there are a lot of good ones, but apparently you picked the best one, as far as I can tell. This is a top-rated episode on IMDb. And it's called Blink of an Eye. It's from season 6. It's episode 12. And we are really going to talk about this episode. So if there's anybody who doesn't want to be spoiled on anything, feel free to pause now, go watch it, and come back. We'll wait. And we're back. I was very impressed that you picked this one because it is one of the best ones. I mean, for me personally, and I didn't know that it was apparently so high ranked. Not that IMDb is the be all and end all. But this is an episode where it's a great standalone episode, I think, where Voyager just comes along a planet they have never seen before. And I like that Tom Paris. So I like Tom Paris. Just, you know, email me now. But I do like Tom Paris.
You'll find other Tom Paris fans out there.
Yes. He gets to have the first line, which is like, this was never on, you know, the test at the Academy, this planet that looks like sort of like a blurry donut, right?
Mm-hmm. Donuts.
Yeah. Donuts. Sorry, I didn't mean to go there. And basically, it's got the planet has a tachyon core, you know, suspension of disbelief moment here. And it is spinning at 58 rotations per minute. So I think they say like every second is like a day on the planet, something yes. crazy fast. And they want to go check it out. But of course, they get pulled into its gravimetric field and they're stuck there. And what we see from the planet's perspective is that a very primitive race on this planet who worship the stars, and Voyager becomes the new star that they worship. And P.S., this Voyager being there is causing earthquakes.
Yes.
And they call it Groundshaker, sorry, the Groundshaker, which I thought was cool. So that is basically the setup, right?
And that's basically the whole episode too, right? And,
yes.
And we find out that time is marching very quickly on this planet. And the whole point of this episode is from when Voyager arrives to, spoiler alert, Voyager leaves successfully. like thousands of years have passed and the civilization has grown up around them, which is super high concept and I think really interesting.
Yeah. The notion that something – I mean, we've seen it in other things, even in Voyager. Honestly, there was a episode in season 5 where they get stuck on a planet that has slower time, but not – I mean, sorry, quicker time than the Voyager, but not as quick as this, where, yeah, they're trying to figure out how they can get away, and they try to research the planet. And one of my – I mean, one of the best parts of this episode and why I remember it as a doctor episode when it's not really it, – I mean, it's part of it is they send the doctor down there to check things out because he won't be subject to those the time differential between the planet and Voyager. But it cracks me up because it's – Janeway and Torres are standing at the transporter. They beam him down and then they count out loud and they beam him back up or try to. And I thought, really? So you didn't really want it to be that precise. You were just going to count 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, bring him back.
Yeah,
and, it's
good enough.
It's good enough. But they, I guess they were figuring they'd get him back and you know, a few days or something like that. He'd spend a few days down on the planet. But because he they never actually explain why they couldn't get him back right away, but I assume it's because he's the doctor and he immediately went off on adventures.
Well, they said something about the confinement beam was just deteriorating or something like that.
Okay.
Whatever, technobabble. But yeah, the whole point is they wanted to keep him down there so he could have a little adventure for 3.5 years.
Yes. So yeah, the doctor comes back. And yeah, in my memory, I felt like we saw the doctor on the planet, but we don't. It's nope. All – he comes back up to Voyager. And first of all, he's like insanely happy to see them again because – he thought, you know, I mean, he hasn't seen them for 3 years. And that's always fun when there's a time differential where people are going like, we literally just saw you versus, you know, we haven't seen each other for years. So he was very cute. And then he tells him, you know, he's like, he's memorized. He's, what does he say? Commits to memory or something. And I'm thinking, of course you memorized because you're still a computer program. You could like whatever you do will be recorded. But yes, he brings back all this information about the earthquakes and what's going on down there, and also tells them about how everybody on that planet, like, they don't worship Voyager necessarily, but they it's a big part of their culture, and they call it the Skyship. Which I thought was so cute.
It is cute. And they have apparently a whole line of children's toys that are action figures of the Skyship residents.
Yes. In fact, I thought that was very meta because they have a couple of characters on the planet, one saying to the other, you weren't one of those children who had the entire series of Skyship friends. you know, wink, wink, watchers of Star Trek.
That is true. There are all kinds of Voyager friends that you can buy.
So, yeah. And in fact, they go when they're trying to find the doctor. That's the other thing that I thought was very adorable is somebody says, look for opera houses or concert halls.
Yes. And they find him in like 2 seconds, which is 2 days their time. So
I don't know how their scanners actually find stuff like that. But yeah. So but basically the people on that planet are aware of Voyager, and as their civilization advances, which is very fast, like we would do and like we do on Earth, we try to figure out how can we get there. And so that is one of the funnest scenes, I think, is where these two astronauts from the planet, whose name I do not know. I don't know if it had a name. Maybe they, so they go to Voyager, like they actually dock in the shuttle bay and get off on Voyager. And when they see the crew looks like they're stationary because they're moving so much more slowly than the astronauts who come there. And I think that's a really cool, you know, like you say, high concept science fiction. Mm-hmm. Like, what would it be like? You know, because at first they think, are they in stasis? But they're clearly in the middle of having coffee poured. And then for whatever reason, the whole time differential catches up with those astronauts and they basically pass out on the bridge. And that's when the crew sees them. So I think about that, like that ship must have come up and docked like in one of those like split seconds to Voyager where they wouldn't even notice it. Or be able to stop them. And the next thing they know, there's people on their bridge.
Yes, and that was, as I watched it, I was confused as to how they could just dock and get onto Voyager without anyone knowing. And then, of course, that's the big reveal when they go into engineering and everyone's frozen. And you think, oh, that's right. They're different kind of temporal faces. So Voyager hasn't even noticed them yet.
Yeah, that ends up being like kind of a classic Star Trek moment where, unfortunately, the woman astronaut does not survive, but the male astronaut, I mean, he's the pilot, and the doctor saves him, and Janeway is talking to him. And I think, like, how many times have we seen, like, the captain of the starship talking to somebody who just found out, like, what's really going on? And, you know, Picard is good at that, too.
Yeah, as we're talking about this, I think that this is a good – I think it's a good episode. I picked it because I thought it was a good episode, and I remembered it being good, and I'm glad on rewatching that I continue to agree with myself that it is good. But it is not an episode of Voyager that I think is particularly Voyager-y, if that makes any sense. I feel like this is a story that could work in any Star Trek series. Equally as well as it works with Voyager. And that's not a bad thing. I just think that it's not kind of like a particular – it doesn't play on any of Voyager's particular strengths, which makes it interesting because then that makes me think, well, what are Voyager's particular strengths? And I think that it is – for me at least, the struggle for them to get home is the big – thing that kind of sets it apart from everyone else, and they're alone. And this episode, as with many episodes of Voyager, just kind of like that is unnecessary. Like they don't even think about that in this episode. In fact, the weirdest moment in the beginning of this episode is for me is when Janeway and Chakotay are on the bridge, and whoever Tom Paris says, oh, this is a weird planet. And Janeway says, should we check it out? And Chakotay says, that's why we're here. And I thought, no, that isn't why you're there. That is precisely not why you're there. I mean, you're a Starfleet officer, so you will do it because that's kind of in your DNA. But that is not why you're there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that points to the one of the big tensions of the whole series is, must they check out every planet?
It's true. They're taking their sweet time getting back home.
And I mean, obviously, I think it would be a pretty boring show if it was. I don't know. I mean, Battlestar Galactica, you know, for example, as a show I really like. And they are trying to get home. Mm-hmm. They do not stop and look at planets for fun.
Battlestar Galactica is an analog that I also bring up a lot because it's obvious, right? It's science fiction. They are both in looking for home in a different way. Battlestar Galactica is much, much darker than Voyager. Yeah. Voyager does have moments of darkness, certainly, but it is overall, I would say, more in tone with The Next Generation than with Battlestar Galactica or even Deep Space Nine,
right.
Which is something that I have said ad nauseum on my own podcast, that I think it's a missed opportunity in Voyager, but it is not the show that they were going for. So I, you know, that can just be my opinion, but I can't slight the show for not doing what I think it should have done. I can only be mildly disappointed, but that's not what they were trying to do. And so I get it, but it just makes me sad when I see episodes when they pick up that theme and they do it so well that I think this could have been much more of the show, but it's not.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Deep Space Nine was on at the same time. Like, how much dark Star Trek do you want?
All the dark Star Trek.
Well, I want to congratulate you on picking this episode. I mean, it definitely had this interesting twist there at the end where the planet turns on them.
Yes, they try to blow up Voyager.
Great. I was really disturbed at how quickly the shields were going down based on, you know, how advanced can this civilization be?
It kind of falls apart a little at the end because I feel like they ratchet up their technological advances very quickly because they are suddenly shooting off antimatter torpedoes. Then they sent the guy back down to his planet. And then a year and a half or 3 years later, suddenly they've built like these a pair of spaceships that have tractor beams that can pull Voyager out. So it's kind of like, I don't know about that, but it's fine.
That's true. From Chakotay's anthropological perspective, I don't think he really got what he was looking for. They really skipped a lot of steps there, but it is a short TV show, not a documentary.
That's true.
I think it was a lot of fun though. And a good, I'm going to put this on my list of episodes. People can just watch if they want to, if they want to, you know, see a little bit of Voyager there. I think it's pretty well standalone unless you don't catch that the Doctor's a hologram, then you're going to be really confused.
Well, they mentioned it a couple times though, so
yeah, you might be confused anyway because the Doctor has a son on the planet,
which is very confusing.
Nobody knows how that happens, and they just say it's a long story. Scott, thank you so much for being my first guest on Voyager Revisited. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I always enjoy talking to you on Random Trek. I hope I will still get to be a guest on Random Trek because I like all the Star Trek, not just Voyager, and it's always fun to talk about it with you.
Well, thank you for having me. I feel honored for you to foolishly pick me as your first guest for your podcast, and congratulations on launching the podcast.
Thanks so much, Scott. And thank you, listeners, for being here for the first episode. You can find Voyager Revisited online at voyagercast.com. You can follow us on Twitter and on micro.blog at Voyager_cast. I will be back in 2 weeks with another guest to discuss Star Trek Voyager. Until then, time's up.